In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, one God. Well, I and a few of the parishioners here went to a lecture last night by Dr. Jordan Peterson. I know some of you are familiar with him, maybe not everybody. Dr. Jordan Peterson is a clinical psychologist. He's a professor at the University of Toronto. And he's become rather well known the past couple years, especially after standing out against a certain bill in Canada that compelled speech. It demanded that you call somebody who identifies as transgender by whatever pronoun they wanted. Dr. Peterson came out and said, "Well, I really don't have any problem calling people what they want, but when it's compelled by law, I have a big issue with it." This created a big hubbubaloo, and he became very well known, and his lectures, which are available online and different talks he's given, are on YouTube, and he's just gotten hundreds of thousands of views. He's become very popular. And he's become especially popular with Orthodox Christians, because while he himself is not Orthodox yet, a lot of the themes that run throughout his talks have kind of this Orthodox flavor to them. And if you've ever heard him speak, you know he tends to have two or three or four or more trains of thoughts kind of going all over the place, and eventually he connects them, and he can be kind of difficult to follow, but his basic message is pretty simple, and that's that we have freedom, but we also need responsibility. You want to go fix the world, go fix yourself first. It's pretty simple. Pretty simple, but it's a message that we don't hear too often, and so he's become a great influence on especially young people, and especially young men. He's given them this sense of responsibility. And last night, he gave a talk, which I thought was just, it was phenomenal. It was one of the best I've ever heard him give. And he talked a lot about this idea of suffering and fear. He was talking about a lot of different issues. I won't go into the whole thing of why he was discussing this, but he discussed the idea that the way to deal with fear is not to, as we see happen today on a lot of college campuses, go create a safe space. He said this is actually the most dangerous thing you can do for people, is to shield them from everything they're afraid of. What happens is they end up being more afraid their entire life. You never actually grow. He says you grow by confronting and overcoming fear. You grow by suffering. And in suffering and confronting fear, you overcome these things, and that's how you grow. That's how you grow character, and that's how you grow as a person. And so he kept saying this thing that when we have fear in front of us, what we really ought to do, he said, when the dragon is in front of you, you essentially take up the sword and the shield and you go stand before it. He said this much better than I'm saying it now. But to the couple parishioners we had who I knew were there, I started texting them in the middle of this. And I texted them St. Cyril on the Athenites, famous teaching, keep thy mind in hell and despair not. Take the thing that you're most afraid of and enter into the depths of it. I would say that Dr. Peterson's point was just one step away from St. Siloan. Dr. Peterson was suggesting that you can find some courage within yourself. And when you find that courage, you stand face to face with what you fear, you overcome it, and you move on. From the Orthodox standpoint, though, this is missing a really significant essential element. Of course, that's Christ. When we have Christ, we overcome things in a way that doesn't engender pride. And again, it's one of the things that I like about Dr. Peterson. He's a great proponent of being humble. He says, you know, you think you're a good person. Oh, maybe at times you are, but you're not all the time and you're not completely good. So get over yourself, essentially. We have to understand that given a different circumstance in life, if we lived in a different time, if we lived in a different culture, if we lived with a different family and a different education, we could all end up just like the Germans who were guarding Auschwitz. We have to have the humility to be able to face that and realize it. But in facing true fear, we have to understand that the most basic element of all fear, you get down to any fear whatsoever, no matter what the fear is, I don't want to pick on any of our youth, but even if it's the fear of a priest who's holding a grasshopper and walking towards you. Poor Anna. We had a good time yesterday at the new property. What it comes down to is all fear, ultimately, is a fear of death. Death is the basis. It's the foundation of everything. Death is the essence of all fear. Back when I was in college, I read some philosophers who said, if you take death away, all other fears eventually fall too. The foundation of every fear is death. And this is something that without Christ, we have no power over whatsoever. This idea of personal growth, of growing character, it can only take you so far. Because eventually, we have to face death. Having said that, we come to today's gospel, and it's a rather short gospel lesson where a woman who's been widowed and has an only son, her son has died, and Christ walks up and touches the bier, tells him to arise, and he awakes from death. And the people cry out, "A great prophet has arisen." They'd seen this before in Israel, even with the prophets. They'd seen death conquered, but only temporarily. This is why St. Paul makes such a big deal about the fact that if Christ did not rise from the dead, our faith is in vain. Today's gospel shows that Christ had at least some temporary power over death, but to have permanent, lasting, eternal power over death, that's what we really seek. And when we see that Christ is the one who has that, he has not just the ability to raise someone else from the dead, but when death overcomes him, he destroys death. He obliterates it. And then he offers himself to us. He says he wants to be one with us just as he and the Father are one. He wants us to be able to say with St. Paul, "It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me." This is the whole entire Christian endeavor. This is everything for us. We want to take the power of death in us, which comes about through the passions, the sins that we have within us, and eradicate them and replace them with Christ. So that when death tries to overtake us, it shatters. Because it can't hold Christ. It can't hold he who is life. This is why this gospel lesson, we read it wrong when we read it as just another one of Christ's many miracles. It's a nice miracle story. You know, what's the gospel lesson today? Well, Luke tells us about a man who died. Christ comes and he has this miracle and he raises him from the dead. Isn't that nice and beautiful? I don't know. It's only nice and beautiful if that power over death remains permanently so. And if it becomes available to us as well. Then it's not just another miracle. It's a story about life absolutely overcoming death for all eternity for each and every one of us. This is a much bigger story. It means that confronting fear is something completely new for us. We're not just going to overcome one fear, we're going to overcome all darkness and all death within us. I think one of the struggles today in Christianity with our many thousands of denominations is that this victory of Christ over death becomes merely a story when we don't have proof of it right in front of our faces. Suddenly the faith that was not given to the wise of the world, but rather to the babes, the faith that was given to fishermen, not philosophers, becomes a faith only for the philosophers. Because we have to be able to rationalize with historical critical arguments that Christ indeed did live, that he was indeed crucified and that he did rise from the dead. And suddenly we have an intellectual faith. And we offer this faith to Christ. We say, I really believe in my head, I really believe that Christ rose from the dead, and therefore it's good for me too. Orthodox Christianity and says this is not enough. Orthodox Christianity looks at this and says there must be more. If Christ destroys death, it can't just be for the future age. He has to destroy death here and now. That's why this isn't just a story. That's why this isn't just one miracle that happened in time. We have to see the power of Christianity over death now. There has to be proof of it now. I came back, as you know, last week from an over 3-week trip in Romania. And one of the greatest things that we get to do in Romania is in a country that's a little bit bigger than some of our states, a little bit bigger than Pennsylvania, there are literally hundreds of monasteries. They're all over the place. And so we get to go and view some of these monasteries, some of the most beautiful places you'll ever be. They're beautiful in an outward sense, but in an inward sense even more so. One of the monasteries we went to, I've been to it before, and I wanted to go back, was Neamț. Neamț Monastery is one of the most famous monasteries in all of the world. It's been there for 1,000 years. Some of the greatest saints of the past few hundred years, one named St. Paisius Velichakovsky, they have their relics there. His whole entire body is there. It's incredible. Along with his body, they had other relics. They had the skull of a stylite, somebody who lived on a pillar most of his life. But they also had to the side the body of one whose name we don't know. And the story, I know I've told a couple of you this story before. The story is that about 10 years ago, in one of the pathways leading to the church, the stone that made up the pathway began to become uneven. And eventually it started lifting up out of the ground. And they thought, well, there's no trees around. We can't understand. This can't be roots. I don't know. Maybe there's some sort of gas or something under here that's pushing this up. And so they began to dig. And when they had dug enough that if there were any air or gas leaking out there, it could leak out and it would stop. This didn't stop the ground from continuing to move up. And so they decided, well, we better dig and find out what's happening here. And they began to dig and they discovered a tomb of a monk. The tomb of a monk. he said, what? They opened up the tomb. And here were the incorrupt relics that were incredibly fragrant of this monk. No indication of a name anywhere. And so he became known as the unknown saint. And they took his body and they placed it inside of the church. They placed a cover over it. About 5 years ago when I went, there was a cutout. You could actually venerate his hand. They've since changed the location. Then they put him with this glass over him, except in the glass there's a big circle cut out right on his forehead, and you can go and venerate his forehead. I'm telling you, the fragrance coming off of these relics was the strongest and most beautiful I'd ever experienced. This unknown saint, who we can't make any icons of, who we don't know the name of, had this beautiful fragrance coming out of his body. There was no stench of death at all. Just this incredible, incredible fragrance rising up from his body. That's a sign for us. Christ didn't just raise one person. He didn't rise from the dead just for himself. He destroyed death. We have to have the evidence of it here and now. I read when I was in Romania this book by Father John Romanidis, this great theologian of the 20th century. And his statement is very simple. He says the church is a relic factory. And any church that can't create relics does not have power over death. It's a rather bold and blunt statement, but you experience something like that and you begin to see why he made such a statement. I'll tell you one other quick one. The first monastery we went to was one I had never been to before. They have the relics there of Saint Philothea, who my daughter is named after. Again, I know a lot of you have heard this before, so forgive me. Saint Philothea lived about 800 years ago in Bulgaria. She had a very pious mother who taught her how to pray, how to fast, to love to give alms, to really love Christ. Her mother passed away, and her father remarried. And you had that typical story of the evil stepmother. The stepmother was not so kind to her, and yet she took what she learned from her mother and continued on. She continued to pray, to fast, and to give alms. Her father would work every day out in the fields. And one day her father came to the stepmother and said, "You know, I have a complaint. Every day you make me lunch and you send it out. My daughter brings me my lunch and it's never enough. I'm working hard out there and it's barely enough food." And the stepmother said, "Oh, I make you plenty. I make you absolutely enough food. It's your daughter. Go watch what she does. She's not giving you all the food if you think it's not enough. She gives it to these poor people, these beggars and stuff." And the father thought, "Giving away my food, let's see if this is really true." And so he hid behind a hedge. The next day, and he washed his daughter, and sure enough, Philothea took the basket of food, took half of it out, and began to distribute it among the poor. And the father, in a rage, this food that he worked his own hands for was being given away without his permission, and so he picked up a hatchet, and in a rage, he threw it at her. It hit her in the leg, and she began to bleed, and she bled out to death. Of course, the father was in great distress over this, and he ran over to pick up the body, and it wouldn't budge. Young girl, 12 or 13 years old, can't lift up the body. He thinks maybe it's his grief, so he calls other villagers over. No one can lift the body. And so they call the local bishop, and they say, "We don't know what's happening. The father's obviously completely broken apart. He's killed his daughter. And now they can't even lift the body to bury her." And the bishop began to pray, and he said, "You know, I think I understand what's happening here. She doesn't want to be buried where you want to bury her. And so we'll begin naming different locations. And if we name the place where she wants to be buried, then we'll be able to lift the body." And so he began to name places, one after another, after another, after another. They couldn't lift it. And finally he named this place called Curtea de Argeș in Romania. And as soon as he mentioned this place, her light body was lifted up. And so for 800 years, at this monastery in Romania, they've held her body. She's become known as the protectress of Romania. You go all over Romania, and somewhere in almost every single church, you'll find an icon of St. Philothea. And so we went and venerated the relics of St. Philothea, and they have this beautiful cloth icon over her body, and metal, except for one area where they have glass cut out right in her hand. And you look there, and sure enough, you see she's incorrupt. Her body has not decomposed. Although it's kind of this golden brownish hue, the skin is still there. A little 13-year-old girl. I mentioned to quite a few people, I've been to many places where I venerated relics. I've been to the relics of St. John of San Francisco, also incorrupt. I've venerated other incorrupt relics and many other relics. I mean, probably now hundreds of different saints. I have never experienced the peace that I experienced inside this little church where the relics of St. Philothea were. I told Father Justin, I said, I had this experience where I couldn't pray. I had a book with me with a list of names, And I was going to pray for almost everybody in the whole parish. I had to wait till I left the church to pray. My horrid prayer would only bring about a stench. I mean, there was just, there was nothing that I wanted to do to ruin that peace there. And my sad pittance of a prayer wouldn't have done anything to help it. It would have just harmed it. You just wanted to be there. We left. I told Presbytera, I've never experienced that amount of peace and grace in my life. You could have locked me in there for a month and I would have been fine. No food, no water. It doesn't matter. You could have just stuck me there and I would have been just fine. Incorrupt relics. Death had no power over a 13-year-old girl. St. Justin Popovich, by the way, in Sihastria, not too far from Niamps, where Elder Cleopa was, Elder Cleopa met St. Justin Popovich, and so St. Justin Popovich's hat is there next to Elder Cleopa's hat. I got to venerate the hat of St. Justin as well. Even in the hat, you could sense grace. Even in his hat, there was grace. It was incredible. He admonishes us to look within our hearts and find what is inviting death into ourselves. What passion are we dealing with? You've heard me say this before. It's incredibly important. It's essential. We have to be able to look within ourselves and pick out at least one passion with which we're struggling, one sin that has not yet been conquered, and come up with a plan with our spiritual father on how to conquer that. We cannot coast through orthodoxy. It doesn't work that way. We have an active faith. We have to actively be seeking the death that is still within us and seeking to drive it out. If a 13-year-old girl could do it such that her relics have remained incorrupt for 800 years, we can do the same. We have to be able to do that. We have to have an active faith. If you can't do that, if you can't discover what it is... By the way, we have many sins, but each one of us, each and every one of us, has one in particular with which we struggle the most. And once we conquer that, another one will come, and another one, another one, until they're all eradicated. We need to be able to pick out that one, and we need to have a plan ready to begin to overtake it. This is the message of today's gospel. It's not that Christ had this one nice miracle where he raised one man from death. It's that he gave us a sign that when he died, he would destroy death completely. So St. Justin Popovich says, every single day that a passion is inflamed in your heart and you cry out to Christ and you overcome that passion, you invite a little piece of life, a little piece of paradise, and you plant it there in your heart. But every day that a passion rises up, and instead of trying to overcome it with the light of Christ, we submit to it. We give in to it. We seek the pleasure of that passion, and we embrace it. Then we invite a little piece of death into our hearts, and we plant death there in its place. This is the Christian life for us. Christ has destroyed death. He has proved his power over it. Now he awaits us by his grace, driving death from our own hearts so that he can make a throne there and destroy it permanently for us. This is the goal of all Christianity. We have to be able to find where we're lacking in this. Is there a person you can't stand for years? The very name of that person drives you to anger and hatred. This is where you begin. Have you struggled for months or maybe years to pray because laziness just overtakes you? And you find it almost impossible to wake up early in the morning or to stand before your icons at night? Then this is where you begin. Do you find that fasting is just torturous? You just love that dead animal so much that you can't put it aside before Christ, then this is where you begin. Is it hard work? Of course it's hard work. But who doesn't want to end up like these saints who I got to venerate? Who doesn't want to end up with 800-year-old relics that have never decomposed? Who doesn't want to end up with a skull that is fragrant, such that people come and venerate it, and you can't even describe the scent that comes out of it. This is what we're aiming for. These are the signs that death is destroyed. It's our job now to take that life and embrace it. The proof is there before us. Now it's time to get to work. Engage your will, seek humility, seek love, and let Christ destroy death in your heart for all time. Amen.